Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, Katie Godden.
And James Politilo from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. This week, I'll be speaking to Katie about why learning isn't a goal. So Katie, this is one of the key mantras that we live by as a business. Do you want to sort of set the scene and talk through with our listeners why we strongly believe that learning itself is not a goal you should be aiming for?
I think when we first start talking to our clients, we kind of really take things back to the very beginning. So like what the purpose is that they're trying to achieve, for example. So I'm really understanding their business. So we want to understand like the context of their business, what the purpose of their business is, and what they're then trying to achieve with that, what their goals are going forward, etc. Then we want to align learning to those goals and those business objectives. So learning itself isn't the actual goal. It's what you're trying to achieve is the goal, but learning helps you achieve that, if that makes sense. So that's part of the pathway in order to be able to create those goals. So whether that's selling more product, improving productivity, etc. Learning itself isn't just the outcome, it's those bits, but learning will help you and enable you to be able to then achieve those goals.
So that could seem potentially quite counterintuitive that a learning team is not almost trying to achieve learning. And I know there will be lots of learning professionals and learning teams out there that view that learning as the end point in their journey.
I understand why learning teams would think like that, because it's their job to create learning. So I do get that. But I think what learning teams need to think about is the bigger picture of it. So setting the scene, creating that purpose, going back to those objectives, etc. Because you've got different types of learning within an industry as well. So you might have compliance bit where you've got your kind of tick box learning. Again, the doing the learning itself isn't the outcome of that. Being compliant and legal is the outcome of that. So it doesn't just stop there, right? Because you need to then do kind of yearly refreshes, whatever that might be, in order to kind of keep those boxes ticked. So I think if people thought about it in a different way, they'll start to understand that it doesn't just stop when the learner stops learning, you know, because again, they might want to go somewhere else in their career. They might want to increase their learning. And I think learning's always being done, but we don't necessarily realize it sometimes, you know, like reading an article, you're gaining knowledge, whether you like to think that you're learning or not, but you are, because you're reading something that you might not necessarily know and you're learning about something. So I think it's just having that awareness that learning isn't necessarily one way and then it stops. We're constantly doing it, and we're doing it for a reason. You know, there's always a purpose behind learning. I don't think many people out there would go out and just actively learn for the sake of learning. We're doing it for a reason, and they're all personal, whether it's to get further up the career ladder, gain a new skill, move and change careers completely, etc. We're all doing that for a reason, and learning enables us to be able to achieve those things.
I'm guessing that if you take learning in that silo perspective, you may not have the outcome you want, because getting a promotion is probably not just doing learning. Being a safe organization is not just doing learning. So if that is where you end, you're not going to help people achieve those end goals and maybe create a realistic path to achieve those goals either.
Yeah, and to be fair, from my experiences like the when I've worked in businesses where learning is just like the end goal, just to tick that box, they haven't really had like a really pure learning culture. So like you'd often find that learning would be done like in your induction within the first couple of weeks, just to get it out of the way. And you wouldn't hear from learning again. You might get an email reminder a year later to say you need to do fire safety because that's expired. But again, that would be it. Or you might talk about it on your annual reviews and things like that, but that's purely just to kind of tick a box again to say, look, I'm doing my development, etc. So I think the organizations and learning teams that are kind of purely focusing on that aren't necessarily creating that really great learning culture where it's okay to learn. It's kind of more a necessity and a tick box, like I said.
So if we've got learning teams that are in that way of, they're almost expected just to deliver a something like an induction, some compliance learning, they've got very sort of strict boundaries as to where they go. I'm guessing that's why those learning teams might be more expendable when we get into some of the difficult and challenging times like we face at the moment, in terms of difficult economic times, companies facing cuts and pressures on all sorts of costs, and we're starting to see learning teams, people in learning vendors being laid off, and that possibly contributes to that.
Yeah, definitely, which I think is a shame, because I think learning and doing an induction, I think that's really necessary as well, because if you've ever started in an organization and you've just rocked up on day one and you haven't got anything, it feels really daunting, I think, or it has done for me personally, and you don't feel very included in that. Whereas if you might have had a bit of pre-onboarding before your start date, so you might have a bit of an introduction to what you can without actually physically starting on the day, you've got that flavor of what the culture will be like, what your workplace will be like. And then if you have a really great induction, that's all learning and it is necessary, you know what I mean? But I think it's just how teams approach those things. And then I think that really sets the scene for how you can then create that learning culture going forward. Because I think if you don't have that, and if teams just get rid of learning teams that are creating that stuff for budgetary reasons, and I understand why teams can see why they are probably one of the first ones to go. But it's just a shame, because I think it is a really important piece to have that really great piece of learning there. But I think it's learning teams sometimes need to think about it slightly differently to create that really good learning piece, not just have loads of online courses that you have to sit and click through and you're just left in the corner on your own. You know, like have really engaging content where you might have to get up and walk around and go and see an office or go and see your site or whatever. And have videos like infographics. So I think it's a way that you do actually create that can help with those engagement bits. But I think it's still important. I don't think you should necessarily cut them out of the budget, even though it might look like an easy option to do.
And I think, you know, having gone into teams and found learning teams and trainers and learning development professionals who are maybe happier to stay in that sphere of I'm just focusing on learning, I think having spoken and spent time with them, there's a couple of reasons that drive it. And one is around effectively thinking about what they can control. So people will see it's not my job to do this. So there's almost a, I can control the classroom. So I can control people coming into my space. I can deliver a program. I can try and improve that. But everything else that happens outside of that room is beyond my control. And I can see a certain level of sympathy to that. You know, you can, in a learning role or in any role, almost become the person who wants to fight every battle. So I understand about understanding what you can control, influence, and the stuff that's completely, you know, you're completely powerless to impact. So I think that's one thing. And sometimes the other thing is around, again, aligned to this, but around interest as well. So are they interested in doing those other things, or is there interest in imparting knowledge or in coaching people? And do they have the skills, confidence, awareness, time, reward, motivation to actually get involved beyond just actually I'm measured and rewarded on people walking out at the end of this session and, you know, ticking off a happy sheet to say that they've enjoyed it or they've had a great day. And it's more about that immediate experience than it is about the long-term impact, because that is beyond our control. And I can just control how nice the experience was or how fulfilling that immediate experience it was, rather than the bigger picture stuff.
Yeah, and I think there's a third point to add to that as well. It's kind of like the fear of that. So the fear of it not actually going right, or actually understanding the impact of what your learning has on whatever you're trying to achieve. So for example, if you're trying to increase sales and you're working with a sales director to align your learning, however that's delivered, and you want to increase that, and it doesn't necessarily work straight away, because obviously you're going to have to go back, tweak things, and like keep learning from everything. You're not going to just create something and that be it. But, you know, I think a lot of people, especially in learning, to kind of have that fear of it. If it doesn't work, am I going to just get sacked or whatever, you know? And like you said, that goes back to control, because they can't control that. But for me personally, if you don't understand what impact your work's having on the wider situation, what's the point of doing it? That's what I thrive off. I like looking at data. I like seeing where there are correlations between, if someone's doing great learning, does that improve their sales? Does that improve their productivity? You know, like, are you then reducing health and safety risk because you're delivering great learning, etc.? All of those things that learning does impact on, we just don't necessarily have those really good correlations at the moment, because I think learning still sits quite siloed within a business and it's just there to do, you know. And I think there's too many businesses where it is just at the beginning, go in, do a bit of learning, and we haven't got really great learning cultures yet. And I think it's a shame. But when you start to realize that the correlations between everything in learning can impact all of those things, I think it'll be a lot better, and I think people experience learning a lot better.
Yeah, and I think you make an important point there about fear and accountability and almost the culture around how different functions interact and work together. Because I have certainly been in businesses where, take for example, a sales or operational function are quite happy to claim victory when sales are going well or when a new initiative goes well, and they're happy to own that and to support it and advocate it. However, if things aren't going well, the amount of times I've seen it's due to something else, and it's not always just learning or training, but it could be the IT system's the problem, it's recruitment haven't got us the right people, it's the learning or training team our people aren't trained enough or they don't know enough. And again, there's a certain level of not taking accountability and ownership of all of those things. And this is maybe where the learning culture breaks down, because there's not a collective, collaborative responsibility of trying to drive performance. It's almost someone is trying to claim victory or pass the buck for different things. And within that type of environment, I can very much understand why you will just try to stay within your tram lines and not try to go outside that, because that's probably a dangerous place to be, because you just set yourself up to be more accountable for stuff you possibly don't have any control over and only have a certain amount of influence.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a really difficult one, because it comes back to kind of culture, not necessarily learning culture. It's the whole culture of the business, you know, like even having like time to block out to do learning. I think that's completely ridiculous. Like, how do you know at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Friday, because it's quiet, that's when you want to learn? You know, like why isn't it just done as and when you need to? And why do kind of businesses or teams kind of set people up to do it like that? It's just something that I don't agree to. But changing culture and learning culture, etc., they're not easy things, and it isn't going to happen overnight. And I think as more people start to realize the importance of learning and how they impact their departments, like I think COVID helped to a degree, but it might have kind of gone back a little bit since kind of lockdown's been lifted, etc. But I think that saw the importance of learning within businesses, because things change literally overnight, and you had to train your people really quickly on kind of new regulations, new rules, etc. So that kind of highlighted the importance of having a great learning team. And if you hadn't quite done that before COVID, it was a bit more trickier to do and kind of create those guidelines, set those regulations and do that quickly and engaging. I think it does all come back to that, and hopefully people can start to see that correlation, and hopefully people will start to make those changes to make it more easier. And let learning teams be accountable for that, but don't blame them for that, you know. So like work together to achieve those outcomes, because everyone at the end of the day is playing for the same team. You know, you want to all still have jobs at the end of the day. You don't want to destroy the business. But I think teams sometimes kind of go against each other to have that blame game, but that's again down to culture. So
I think that's an interesting point you make around sort of setting time aside. And I think it goes back to the original question of what's purposeful learning, and learning isn't a goal. And it feels to me like if you're in an organisation that's having to set time aside, in some way you could view that as really positive. So we are bought into learning, we're creating a learning culture. However, that feels to me like learning is the goal. So spending that time learning could almost be the goal. Now, you could rephrase it or reposition it and say, well, that's about time to enhance your performance. And you can do whatever you need to enhance performance during that time, which may just be doing your job. It may be doing some learning. It may be, you know, going and seeing another team, and whatever it happens to be. But that could be one way you badge it. And then I look at it another way and think that if I've really created buy-in from my team or my business and the people across my business to understand what it is that they're trying to achieve, whether that's for their current role or whether it's career progression, job change, or understanding the necessity of learning new skills, so something like AI or whatever it happens to be. If I've done those things, then what it should mean is that I will necessarily make the time, because if something's important to me, I will always find time to do that. We know that that's human nature. We manage to squeeze in the things we need to do or have to do. There might be a point where you're trying to change the culture and you're empowering people to do that, and having the permission of the time to do learning might be a way of allowing people to own that space. But again, we've seen in numerous examples where it's just been this time put in that often people don't know what to do with that time, or it becomes a bit like a Netflix session where I'll just aimlessly go through some learning for 2 or 3 hours just to tick the box and show that I am playing the game rather than I'm really doing something that drives my purpose or the business purpose or my performance.
Yeah, definitely. And you're probably finding, like, if you look at what your people are doing, they're probably Googling stuff anyway. So, like, if they haven't got that learning that's readily available on whatever format you kind of produce it in, whether that's online training, workshops, whatever, if they can't find the information, they're not going to wait to the 9 o'clock on a Friday morning because that's learning time. They're going to Google it. So my thinking is, why don't you have that great learning there that's really easily accessible? We've spoke about Google before. Like, there's such a raft of information on there. Like, how do you know, as like the learner, which bit that you're getting right that correlates to your business? Whereas if you had that internally and your business was providing that kind of work Google, you're able to do that anyway. So I think it's just making it easier and making learning more accessible for people, but understanding they're not doing that as their end goal. They're doing it as part of their end goal. It all comes down to that. No one stops at learning and then just goes, yeah, ta-da, I've done it. You know, like in an induction, that's why it's done at the beginning. You know, you don't do it at the end of the job. You do it at the beginning because it enables you to have a better start when you're starting a company and, you know, and a new job. So you're not going to do that midway through it at the end, are you? Because there's no point then.
No, and I think that's sometimes why you might end up with low attendance rates or high booking and low attendance rates of something that, you know, learning can end up as the number 10 on your to-do list because you just haven't got time, or actually it's not important. But like you said, even if it's long-term learning, eventually that will hit the top of your importance list or your to-do list. And it's also thinking about those different things that people are trying to put in place. So it might be that you can say, well, people will learn in the flow of work or whatever the badge is, by Googling, by asking someone, by trial and error, by accessing their learning system, you know, all sorts of just-in-time content that might be available. You've then got maybe a longer term journey. So I want to learn how to code in a new language, or I want to move through to being a line manager where I'm an individual contributor. And that's more of a journey with that we can help as learning teams to navigate people through. But I think, again, human nature is some people take that and drive and go under their own steam. Sometimes having that programmatically or set dates forces people along that journey. But it's also about thinking, how do we make sure that learners understand that by doing that stuff now, I'm having an immediate benefit. Because sometimes the balance businesses have is, I can't let my person go on that sales training course today because they need to hit their sales figures to keep me in the job by the end of the month, which is counterintuitive for the business, demotivating potentially for the employee, but and demotivating for the learning team. So I think there's an element of, again, where learning sits in terms of immediate and gratification and short-term reward against that longer-term investment as well, and how that's positioned and understood and recognised by the business. So how would it be viewed if a sales training team who wasn't developing their people in whatever way you could measure that, but just hitting through short-term targets and burning their people out, you know, how could that be built into a metric to change behaviour? So there's lots of nuance, I think, around all of these aspects.
Yeah, and I think learning doesn't sit in a bucket of its own. You know, they all kind of, the data that you're getting from learning, so whether that's people doing, completing courses or whatever it might be, that the data that you're receiving, that has to work with the kind of retention data that you're getting from recruitment, you know, your HR data, so sick days and stuff. So like you're saying, you might be hitting those targets, but they're short-term goals and gains, because in 6 months' time, are you even going to have a sales team that are going to be there, because they're so worn out, they've then decided to leave and go to a company that offers better well-being, you know what I mean? And then again, it all starts again. So yeah, I think that comes back to the importance of data that you're getting from it as well, and like, and understanding that data and understanding how to read that, and how you read that with the rest of the business data, and how important that is, you know. But again, it all comes back to, that's still not the end goal, you know what I mean? And using that data to then change up what you are doing. So it's not just creating something, like I said earlier, and then going, well, we've created that training, people are doing it, that's our job done. Like, it constantly, you constantly need to review that. You constantly need to review where the business is going, like what changes have been made, et cetera, to keep up to date and relevant. Because there's nothing worse like than a learner going in and you're reading stuff. I've done it before. I've read courses that the examples are from like the 90s, and you're like, you're 30 years out of date, you know what I mean? But you don't want that. You want things to be up to date, relevant.
I think that, you know, talking about data and measurement and impact as well is something that's important, because you think about what it is that you're measuring, and sometimes we can get far too scientific about trying to show, you know, both correlation and causation. So, you know, Katie went on this learning course, therefore she is performing better than James, who didn't go on this learning course because of X, Y, or Z, where we know there are a myriad of other factors that sit around there. So I know in previous businesses I've worked in said, well, you know, you can compare site A against site B in terms of those that consume the learning and are selling more. And there's a, you know, there is a correlation. You can see they have done, everyone on the site has done the learning, and their sales are 20% up above site B, that no one's done the learning, or one person's done the learning, and there is no increase or visible increase in their sales or their service or whatever the target is. I think when you step back and look at that, though, everyone on site A is also doing a load of other stuff because they're a compliant driven focused team, and the learning itself, it just happens to be one of the things they choose to do. The fact that correlates and they sell more of that product is probably just down to a wider set of factors as well. And I'm not saying the learning isn't important in that, but it's about understanding the contribution, and that sometimes you can't just get down to that immediate line across. And again, that can be played the other way, of just undermining everything you do. Well, there is no way of showing any impact because it's all too woolly, or there's too many contributing factors. You can't isolate it like a scientific experiment. And I've seen a lot of people talk about evidence-based practice around particular things, and trying to get very scientific on people-based issues. And sometimes I think you need to look more at the nuance of this, that actually having those things in place, having learning, someone using a tool in a particular way, there might not be 100% scientific proof that that's had a direct impact, but is it positively contributing? Is it helping in that? Or, you know, again, so it's being quite mature about how you use data, both quantitative and qualitative data in measuring and trying to prove your worth, and not thinking about I've got to prove my worth, but about how I'm using that data to improve what I do as well, to enhance the service I deliver.
Yeah, I think it comes back to as well, like how you word that, because like you said, there's no way that you can prove that, well, Bob did this course in selling this product, and so that's why he sold it. You know, there's tons of different factors. Like I've done it before when I've worked in retail, where we've literally had to take like thousands of lines worth of data out of reports purely because there were other factors that then affected that. So shops have been redone, you know, like shops are in different locations, so you couldn't make that comparison. So you only had like a really small set of data to be able to make that. And again, we weren't allowed to go and we weren't allowed to say, sorry, that this is why. So we directly impacted it. It's like we were likely to have impacted it because they did the learning. So again, it comes back to how you phrase that. But yeah, I think it's some of it's using common sense as well. Like if you learn about something, so especially if you put it as simple as you're learning about how to sell a product, even if you don't do any training, you know nothing about it and you're kind of blagging it, you might sell it. But if you actually go on, do the training, read up about it, and then have the confidence to be able to talk to a customer about it, you're probably more likely to sell it. So yeah, it's using that common sense and that data and the data that you're getting, but using it in conjunction with the other data that you're getting and kind of seeing the benefits that way. And like you said, not just disregarding it as well, because I think a lot of people do that where, but that's why learning teams, I find, often just use the completion rates or how many times someone's logged in. Like that's such pointless data. It doesn't matter how many times someone logged into a learning system. They could have logged into through SSO or by accident or whatever. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing anything. You need to know the stuff that they're engaging with, the correlation between the other bits that they're doing, the impact it's having on that, you know. That's the bit that's really important. It's not that kind of data that doesn't really mean anything. You know, completion rates isn't anything, especially when you're looking at SCORM courses anyway. You can only get 4 results out of the system. It's so outdated. So
yeah, and yes, I think
about that.
And I think it's interesting to look at, you know, data and how people view it, because data is a source of information that normally drives further questions or interrogation, etc. And I remember getting one particular bit of feedback around people were watching a particular video too often. And that was seen as a negative thing because people in their mind had, I should watch it and get something straight away. So if I'm watching it more than once, it's because it's confusing, because it's badly worded or whatever it happens to be. And when we did some investigation, people weren't actually watching it because it was badly worded. They were watching it because it was full of quality information. They were actually going back in to pick up and digest that because it was a useful video. But, you know, you'd assume from almost one point it's either funny or there's something, a mistake or whatever. But human nature in this case was actually this was proving to be a useful resource, and people were revisiting it regularly to hone and tip up on the information they needed to perform. So, you know, the initial data and the assumptions made were incorrect, you know, in terms of why people were revisiting. And I think it's having that data is not the be all and end all, but again, part of the journey and part of what you're trying to do to continually improve your learning team.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it again comes back to how we view what training or learning is in an organization as well, because I think you've got the people that are at the really traditional end, which think it's just kind of either ticking a box of online training that's generally kind of the compliance stuff, and then it's going to a workshop to find out about something, then it's doing some face-to-face training, you know, that's really kind of that way of learning. But if you look at it like your example with the video, just makes you think about how you actually learn in your everyday life. Like I think about recipes, so like hot and sour soup, I can never remember how to make that, but you just go onto YouTube. So I've watched that video of how to make that loads of times. You know, if it's just for the ingredients, what I need to actually buy for it, or what the method is or whatever. But that's why I'm going back to it. But I think people, like the people that took it negatively in your example, they're not seeing it from that. And perhaps they want to see it as a negative because they're in that traditional mindset and they're in that culture where learning isn't necessarily done like that, you know, and they can't see the benefit of having it like that. Whereas there is, and that's why you're rewatching it, because you found it useful, and actually you're not going to just ignore it, and you're going to do it in the way that the video says, because it makes more sense to you now and you can revisit it. I think a lot of training isn't revisited, i.e. courses, because either you can't get on them once you've done them because it's that tick box and then they're done and you can't access them for another year because of licensing, or they're too bloody long and you don't want to sit there and click through them, you know what I mean? And you can never find that information again. So I think it's that real shift in mindset to understand why you've got the differences in learning and that side of things as well.
So maybe to help sort of sum up and draw this conversation to a close for people, if you were sat in a business and someone's saying to you, what's the point of a learning team? If it's not there to deliver learning, what is the point of a learning team?
The point of learning teams is to produce learning. And I think that's part of it. You know what I mean? But I think it's making sure that people understand that's not just the sole point. I think for me, a learning team, you need to be in the business. You need to understand the business. You need to understand the different departments. Like, I don't think you should just go in as a learning team, sit there siloed and not understand how the business operates, not understand what they do. You know, go and visit those teams, go and get to know the business, get to understand how it runs, and then always come back to what the business is trying to achieve. Because I think if you sit there and you're doing what you think it should be doing, but you don't know what it's doing, you know, that's when you're gonna become unstuck. That's where things like when the budgets are coming into talks and things like that, that's when you're gonna be a bit more unstuck than teams that are really involved in the business, and their learning teams are really aligned to that, because they'll be having the great conversations with stakeholders to make sure that their learning is beneficial to their teams and the operation of the business. I think if you sit there in silo and you're doing what you think you should, that's, yeah, your assumptions aren't always right, you know.
So I think that's been useful to go through and sort of set that scene and just redraw where learning's positioned, how it contributes to the success of individuals and the business. So if people want to tap in and find out more about your thoughts and expertise on how learning can contribute to business and how people can enhance and evolve their learning functions, what's the best way of them doing that?
So they can get in contact with us. So they can either go to our website, so the learningeffect.co.uk, and we've got contact forms, and you can find out a little bit more about what we do as a business. I'm on LinkedIn with Katie Godden, and my link to LinkedIn is in the show notes below, so they can go and find out more there and get in contact, and we can have a conversation.
Great to catch up. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.